Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our next installment, number 11, I believe it is, of the fabulous book of Samuel, Shmuel HaNavi. So quickly to contextualize, we left off in the middle of Perek Tes, towards the end of chapter 9. We have now been introduced to the amazing Shaul, the man who will be king, Saul. We spoke last week about how it was a stunning, stunning revelation for Samuel on an individual level to be made aware by God that it was a man from Benjamin, Ish Yemini. We spoke about how the Benjaminites were almost extinguished as a people because of the horrific Pilegish Begiva, the rape and murder of the concubine and the retribution of the other tribes against the tribe of Benjamin, the fact that they marginalized them, outlawed intermarriage between the tribes and Benjamin. And so the idea that from Benjamin would be the king, the first king of the Israelites, is stunning. We spoke about young Saul. We said that his father's atonot, his very valuable she-donkeys, were lost. He and a young man go looking everywhere in Israel. They hear that, hey, we're in this place where the Roeh, this great seer is, the Navi, let's go pay him a quarter, a shekel, and he'll tell us where perhaps the donkeys have gone off to. And so that day they come into the city, they meet the giggling group of girls who essentially are delaying them, we said, because the time for Samuel's dominion was not yet at an end. And we, God forbid, would not even want to take away 35 seconds from the reign of Samuel to give it over to the reign that Samuel and Saul shared together for a couple of years. So God has to have everything in its time. And therefore the girls are stunned by the beauty of Saul, so they're all kind of talking all over the place. And they mention that he's here today, the Roeh, the seer that you are desirous of, and he's up in the high place, and they will not start the Seudah, this fabulous meal. They're about to have this private invitation-only meal without Samuel being there. He is the man. So if you hurry up, the girls tell him, you may meet Samuel. So he rushes up, and of course, coming down the hill to greet him, unbeknownst to Saul and the young man, is Samuel himself. So they see Samuel. They say, excuse me, sir, have you seen the Roeh, the seer? We need him. We need some help. Ah, he says, Anochi, that's me. You're looking for me. And we left off at that moment with the knowledge that Samuel had been told 24 hours previously by God, the man who will be the Mashiach, the anointed one, not as in Mashiach that we daven for every day, but remember, the word Mashiach literally comes from to be anointed with oil. So the man who will be anointed with the Shemen HaNishcha, the anointing oil, you're going to meet him 24 hours from now. So set your sundial. So Samuel sets his sundial. And 24 hours, his little app goes off on his iPhone. And he heads out to meet the anointed one. He doesn't know who this is going to be. But he's been informed by God all the details. And so from the perspective of Saul, this is all new. It's going to be a paradigm shift of enormous proportions to Saul. But I think this is an insight, if you will. We can just diverge for a moment into this idea. It's an insight into how our world runs. I'll give you an example. We know there's a beautiful, very strange mitzvah, you may have heard of it, called Shiluach HaKan, yeah, to send the mother bird away. So if a person is out hiking on a nature trail, and there's a nest of kosher birds, you have to send shu away. It says, Tashalech, Shalech, Shalach HaSa'im, Veloz Tikach HaEim Alabanim. You have to shoo the mother bird away. Don't dare take the eggs or the younglings if she is around watching you. Okay. If you do this, it says you'll have long life and good life, and it equates this mitzvah as one of the only commandments in the Torah, along with honoring your parents, for example, that actually give you the sechar, the reward, if you perform said mitzvah. And we said that it has to be that to your knowledge, you don't know where the eggs are. You don't know that there's a nest of birds. If you know, if it's mizuman, if it's prepared, and you know, well, if I take this trail, then I'm going to come across, coincidentally, this nest of birds, and I'll have an opportunity for a mitzvah, then that immediately invalidates the mitzvah. The rabbis in the Gemara in Chulin, at the 12th chapter of Chulin, the Sefer Chulin, the Talmud, say that it has to be specifically, from the human perspective, coincidence. And that's why the Torah says, Ki karei kansipor lefanecho, when you chance upon the bird. But we know that chance is a four-letter word when it comes to Judaism. That is the Amalekite version of the world, which in the same Parsha, ironically, it says, Asher karcha, the Amalekites chanced upon you. So that's not a good, healthy language for the Torah to use, to equate this marvelous mitzvah of sending them of the bird away. But then it's the opposite effect, you see. From human perspective, everything we do in this world is limited in our perspective. How could it not be? We're human beings. We don't have the God perspective. So from our perspective, every opportunity to do a mitzvah, any precept that arises, is always going to be a revelation for us, essentially. Unless it's something like, you know, that you do by rote every day. You get up, you daven, whatever it is, then that's coming to you. But most of the other delicious opportunities that we have in our lives, we don't get up in the morning anticipating their arrival. They come out of the blue. And those are the most wonderful things in our lives that come out of the blue. And yet, are they really out of the blue? Never. But that's the God perspective. So again, Saul is sent on a journey by his dad to find some jaguars, essentially. A couple of cars were stolen from his dad's fleet. Go find them, son. So he goes from looking for donkeys, and he's informed, guess what? You're the new king of Israel. You own everything anyway, so don't worry about it. What? But that's how all of our lives always work. It's magical only because we're human and we have a limited scope. But everything we do, like with the Shaliach HaKen, with sending the mother bird away, from our perspective, we don't know the nest of birds is there. That's God's design. But everything in our world is nested. Sorry, a little play on words there. But it is nested. It means all our things are nested within, you know, like the little jars that's smaller and smaller and smaller, and they're simply taken out and sort of and just exposed to us little by little as we live our lives and we get to experience the magic of our lives. So I think it's a very beautiful idea because you'll see this right now. Saul goes from the extreme of the Gornish, the nothing, the little kid who has no dreams of grandeur, comes from the minimalist tribe, who can't even believe what Samuel's saying to him. And if it's anybody other than Samuel, he would think the guy was a quack. And all of a sudden, boom, he becomes the king of Israel. Like that. Unbelievable. But that's the way our life always works. Always. And of course, you see this in the Purim story, you know, from the outhouse to the penthouse. You have Joseph going from the outhouse to the penthouse like that in the Torah. That's the way all our lives are. The magical things are never mizuman. They're never prepared. But they are prepared. God prepared them for us. But we have to make the right choices that will allow us access to these wonderful events. And I think that's what we're seeing with Saul. Now, just one last thought before we continue. When David and Melech, when King David becomes the king, which we will learn together in a few short weeks, it's a totally different dynamic because David had already been almost predestined with greatness in mind. When he was a shepherd, his father kind of turfed him out of the house, as we'll talk about. He was sort of alienated from his mom and dad. Not a nice thing. And he's out with the sheep Allah, taking care of the sheep, as any great future king has to first have the flock, the literal flock, to take care of. And then God says, oh, you did a good job with the flocks, Moshe, David, then I'm going to appoint you to be the king of the Jewish people. Okay? So that's his, you know, that's his schooling. And he fights off bears and lions, oh my, he's fighting all these things. So in his mind, David has already been given these signs from God. Hey, if you can fight off a bear, if you can fight off some lions and you're successful, maybe Goliath's on the plate too down the road. Who knows? So with David, he's given these signs. Saul? Nothing. Nothing. So when it is sort of foisted on Saul, as we will see, he rejects it. He doesn't want it. And we said that's the bitterest irony. It's sort of like the person who rejects the grandeur. He rejects the honor. And then eventually he reluctantly, or she, accepts the position. And then at the end of the day, what happens? The reverse, right? You want the person out of office. And the person who is the reluctant hero, kill me to get me out of office. That's the attitude at the end of the day. And it's really going to be the case with Saul, where the reluctant Saul, at the end, you essentially have to kill him to get him out of office. So there's a negative shift, if you will, once the office is assumed. And I think that's a little bit of a political thing. We'll talk about it and we'll learn it. So let's continue, please. Perek Tes, chapter 9, verse number 20. So the last thing that Samuel told him was, kind of like The Shadow. Remember the old radio show, The Shadow? Who knows what evil lurks deep in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows. V'chol asher bilvav v'cho agid loch. Everything that is lurking deep in your hearts, in your heart, Samuel says to young Saul, agid loch, I will tell you what is in your heart. I'll tell you what's in store. Wait in here. Pasuk Chav, number 20. V'lasonot. And for those atonot, for those asonos, for those she-donkeys, I know you're worried about it. Ha'avdos lecha. Now remember, Samuel is engaging with Saul. Saul and Samuel have never dialogued. How in the world does Samuel know the quest that Saul and the young man are on? All right, so remember, this is like, it's not even a guessing game. He's just saying it matter-of-factly. He says, Saul, let's just clear it up at first. I know that you're worried, you're doeg, you're nervous about the donkeys and where they are. Well, let me just tell you, Hayom Shloshes Yamim, I know that you've been worried for the last 3 days about them. Al Tasem Es Libcha Lahem. Don't let your heart be troubled. Don't put your heart on them. Don't be worried at all. Ki Nimtzau, they've already been found and returned to Dad. They're back in the garage, in the stable. So let your heart not be troubled about the donkeys. Let's get that off the table right now. Ulemi kochem das Yisrael, and then Samuel gives him a very provocative question. It's like a rhetorical question. Ulemi, and to whom kochem das Yisrael? Do all of the desirous property belongs to Halolecha? Isn't it yours, Mr. King? That's the implication. Ulechol beis avicha, and to the entire household of your father? Now, of course, this is like, Saul's probably listening to Samuel. The first part of the sentence, it makes total sense. Dad's not worried about the donkeys. They've been returned. But what do you mean, all desirous property belongs to me? Saul's thinking, what are you talking about? Okay? Vayter. Chavala, 21. Vaya'an Sha'ul. And so Saul answers Samuel. After he probably picks himself up off the ground and dusts himself off, Vayomer, and he says, hello, Venyamini Anochi? But wait a minute, Shmuel HaNavi, I'm a Benjaminite. Anochi, remember there's that word, not ani, I am. Anochi, this is who I am, existentially. Miktanei Shifte Yisrael, from the smallest, both literally and metaphorically, of the tribes of Israel, because remember, Benjamin's the youngest, the 12th, and he's almost been eradicated by the war of Peleg Shebegiva, so it's a literal and a metaphorical truth. Umi mishpachti hatzira. Not only in Benjamin, I'm the least of the Benjaminites. In other words, it's like the least of the least. So the Benjaminites are the least, and among the Benjaminites, I'm from the youngest of the families. Mikol mishpachos shiftei Benjamin. Even in the Benjamin family, I'm nothing. I'm a garnish. We're not even mentioned in the Torah when they mention who went out of from each tribe from Egypt. We're not even mentioned. My family is kind of new to the game. V'lama dibarta elai kadavar hazeh. He picked up on this. In other words, the implication of what Samuel says, that everything belongs to you. Saul's not an idiot. Humble, yes. A fool, no. He picks up exactly the implication of what Samuel's saying. He says, how could you be talking about me, Mr. Prophet? V'yikashmuel eshaul v'esnaro. So Samuel, he took Saul, and his lad, his ute, v'yivim, and he brought them Li Shkasa, and he brought them into the chamber. Vayitein lahem makom barosh hakruim, and he presents them and places them at the head of the table for all those who had been invited to this meal. Remember, we said the girls, the gaggling girls, had said that they will not start this fancy schmancy seuda, this ritzy meal, without Samuel. Well, guess what? Samuel won't start it without the new king of Israel either. So they have the guests of honor, the Kisei Shel Eliyahu, Elijah's chairs, are waiting for these two guys. So they're brought in, and, you know, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, and everybody is around this table waiting for them. And they're brought in, and everyone stands, and Samuel says, our guests have arrived. You can only imagine, like, Saul. I mean, this is mind-bending. This probably harkens back to when the brothers were brought into Joseph. You know, one minute they're accused of being spies. And, of course, the logical extension, you're accused of being spies, you're about to be thrown in jail, and then you get to have lunch with the king. That makes entire sense, which is about how they feel right now. Right? So Shaul, the young man, and the Nar, his youth, are brought in, and they're given the privileged place at the head of Hakruim, meaning everyone was already invited. predestined again by Shmuel. About 30 distinguished choshev of people there who he wants to introduce the new king of Israel to them. Anyways, these are like the choshev insiders, right? That he wants to first expose to this Saul at a meal, at an invited seuda. Chaf Gimel, number 23. Vayomer Shmuel la tabach. And then Samuel goes and he calls the chef in. All right? So Mari Vitali comes out of the kitchen. Yes, Moshe Batali, he says, Tana Esamanai, he says, do you remember that special choice portion that I told you to set aside for the best of the best? Well, the best of the best has just arrived. So please get that special portion, Asher Nasatilach, that I, Samuel, personally gave to you, because I shechted the animal, and I said, this is for the chosen one. Asher Amarti Alecha, that I said to you, Simo Sa'imah, I said to keep it with you under guard. Do not let anybody else steal that choicest piece. Vayarim ha-tabach es ha-shuk v'ha-leho. And so, Mari Batali, the chef, brings out, and he raises up the shuk, which is the thigh, and v'ha-leho, and the meat that was attached, delicious, falling off the bone. Vayasem v'ha-shol, and he places it in front of Saul. And it's clear that Saul's meal is decidedly greater than all the other guests. Vayomer, and he says, he says, this is the set-aside portion that was destined for you, sir. Please, eat. Because this is the part that was reserved for you for the meal, for the feast. Shmuel says, when I told the cook about the people that I had invited, and so Saul eats with Shmuel and the other assorted 30 guests on that day. I mean, you can only imagine poor Shaul. I mean, he must be just blown away. It's probably an understatement, okay? Vayerdu mehabama ha'ir. 25, Fafeh. So then after the completion of the meal, Shmuel and Shaul, I believe that the young lad, the youth, has probably been kind of on the periphery now. He's kind of, they say, son, this is really not for you. So Samuel and Saul go down. They descend from the Bama. Now the word Bama literally means a high place. It is, of course, synonymous with the place that they would offer sacrifices to God. Well, why was it okay? Well, I'm glad you asked. Because the Mishkan and Shiloh had been destroyed by the Philistines, right? So that was the place of the tabernacle. When that exists, private altars are verboten. They're off the charts. But because of that, because now, even though they have a sanctuary, but we know the ark is in Kiryat Yarim under the watch of that young man. The ark and the tabernacle are not together. Therefore, it was permitted to have a private mizbeach, a private altar. Samuel had his own altar in his own place, Ramah, and that was the place where he brought sacrifices. And even though he was a Levite, in the absence of a temple, it was okay for a Levite to bring the sacrifices and to actually be the one who would sacrifice. If you recall, I'll bring you back to the beginning, do you remember how two-year-old Samuel corrected Eli, his teacher, and almost got killed for it? Because he said to him, why are we waiting for your sons, a bunch of no-goodniks anyways? They're going to come in a couple hours. We're hungry. Let's just go sacrifice. A non-Kohen, a non-priest can sacrifice. Remember that? So Samuel knows the laws ever since he was a little kid himself. And so therefore he had built his own mizbeach, his own altar. The choicest part was there. So they come up from the Bama. And again, the Bama was elevated in terms of the mountainous region where they lived. So it was both a literal truth that it was the highest point of the city to offer sacrifices to God. But the name of the place was the Bama, right? The high place. So it's both a literal truth and a description of the area itself. So they descend, it says in verse number 25. Vayerdu mehabama ha'ir. So they descend down from the Bama to the city proper. Vayidaber im Shaul al Hagag. And then Samuel takes Saul out onto the roof to talk to him privately. Now, back then it was common to have little sort of built-up areas upon the roofs where people would actually have meals, they would have gatherings. It was like sort of like a chashuv, an important place. So he takes Saul out for a life-changing event. All night long, the two of them, with no eavesdroppers allowed, are going to share thoughts of the future and what it means to become the Melech. And essentially it's Shmuel talking and Shaul, Saul, doing a lot of listening, as we're going to see in a moment. So they go up on the roof, Vayashkimu, and they get up the next morning early. So in other words, they stayed the entirety of the night and we'll talk about what they did. Vayehi ba'alos, ka'alos ha-shachar, it was as the dawn was rising, vayehi ba'alos shaul ha-gaga, he calls him up to the roof, leimar saying, kuma va'ashlachacha. He says, get up and I want to send you on your mission, on your way. Vayakom shaul, so Saul gets up from their conversation all night long, vayetzu shnehem hu shmuel ha-kutza. And then he, Saul, and Samuel go outside after their night-long discussion. Hema, they were. Yardim b'ksehair, they were descending down into the midst of the city. Ushmol amar el Shaul, and Samuel says to Saul, Emor l'na'ar, now let's go talk to that youth. The kid who's with you the whole time, go say to the young boy, v'yavor lefaneinu v'yavor, that he should go ahead of us, because I don't want him hearing what I'm going to say to you. V'yata amod kayom, you're going to stand with me today, and I'm going to tell you some more secrets. V'ashmiyacho estavar elokim, I want to inform you of the word of God. So all night long, Shmuel had taught Saul, number one, the implications of his selection of as king. He didn't say, this is your choice, this is what it is. Now that you are the new king, you got to know some things. So he essentially warned him, he reprimanded him, not that he deserved reprimand, but obviously to be the king, it's a sobering thing, the responsibility that it would entail. So he went all night long learning the secrets of the kingship together. And it was so profound that we're going to see at the end of tonight, one of my favorite parts of this part of the book, is going to relate to this amazing relationship that Saul, Samuel, are going to develop through that one fateful night that they spent learning and talking. So remember, Shmuel is God now. He's essentially communicating from God to his chosen one, the anointed one, Saul. Because you're going to see in a moment, we go directly from that momentous 10 hours, let's say, of dialogue into the anointing of the king. As you'll see in the next chapter, we anoint him instantly. So clearly, there's no lag time. Whatever needed to be imparted to Saul to make him realize, number one, what it entailed, what the job was about, the job description, what it meant to be the king, and to warn him of the pratfalls inherent in such power, to not let it go to his head, and all the other Torah, the magic that they must have shared, was so intense that Saul's never going to speak about it again. It's no one else's business. It's so private and so profound that he's going to be very protective of this relationship that he and Samuel have developed. Now, this is not a small issue. So let's talk about the sad part about this. The rabbis say that Shmuel, invested so much in this young man. And this was a superstar young man, right? We said he was head and shoulders, literally and metaphorically, above everyone else in Israel, except for Shmuel and David, who we haven't met yet. David, he's not in the text yet. Except for those two individuals, this is the man. He's a shining star, a superstar. But perhaps Shmuel invested too much, because at the point where Saul starts to fall, Shmuel was unable to, number one, divest himself from Saul, how he should have. He was unable, as almost like someone who is invested so much in a politician, maybe happens in our world, or in a theology, when you invest so much, even when it's exposed that the emperor is not wearing as many clothes as you thought, it's difficult for us to criticize when we should criticize. And this, unfortunately, is going to happen in the relationship with Samuel and Saul. Now, when did this all transpire? During those hours together on the roof. Because no one else in the world was privy to that. We're not even privy to that. Right? I mean, what did it say? It was very sketchy. It just said, well, they were on the roof. And how do I know there was all night long? Because this is Vayeshkim, they got up early the next morning. It didn't detail what they really taught. So the rabbis, you know, give us sort of a general outline of some of the ideas that he adjured him, he warned him, he, you know, whatever. But we don't really know. No one knows. Samuel knows, Saul knows, and God knows. Samuel's not going to write about this. This is very private. So he kind of just gives a framework of what transpired without any detail at all, deliberately so. Okay? Perek Yud, chapter 10. So immediately, upon developing this relationship, Vayikach Shmuel, Samuel takes Espach HaShemen, an earthenware vessel with Shemen, with oil. Of course, that should resonate with the Hanukkah fans here, right? Because we know there was a little Pach Shemen, one little vessel that was sealed with the signature of the Kohen Gadol that burned magically for the 8 days. So a Pach is very fragile. It's earthenware. It can become shards instantaneously if one is not careful with it. And so he takes this earthenware jug with shemen, with anointing oil, vayitzok al rosho vayishakeo, and he pours it over the head of Saul, and he gives him a nishika, a kiss. Wow, because the kiss perhaps tells us the relationship. And that again, as I pointed out a moment ago, that kiss is beyond just an impassioned, impartial Samuel. It's showing the investment that Samuel's placing in the individual Saul, which makes it so much more painful to Samuel. Now, you may ask, how painful is it? Samuel is told by God, Saul's done. And Samuel says, but I've invested so much. I can't bear to see the death and destruction of the anointed one. Now, this is going to sound a little harsh, but you know what God's response to Samuel is? Okay, then you'll die first. You don't have to see him, because I'm not changing my tune. But if you can't bear to witness his downfall, you shall die before Saul, which is tragically what happens to Samuel. Again, it's a very sobering moment, because we should never, ever invest so much that we cannot be impartial, we cannot be dispassionate and stand back, and if we need to criticize whoever that person is, the greatest love you can show for your loved ones is to be able to critique them. Now, it can be done with love. We're not talking about a malicious critique. We're not talking about cynicism. That's destruction. But my gosh, you know, the love that we have for people is gently to reprove them, right? We know it's a Torah law, hochech tochiach, to give reproof where reproof is necessary. It can be done with a hug and a kiss, but it has to be done. And it's a very sobering point, okay? So he takes this oil and he kisses him vayomer, and then he says, hello, isn't it? That's the hey hasha'ela. So it's a question. That little hey and hello is, isn't it? Ki mishachcha Hashem al nachal asol l'nagid. Isn't it true that God has indeed anointed you as the leader? L'nagid means to lead. As the leader over his inheritance, over his flock. B'lechtecha hayam imadi. When you will leave me today, Mr. King, you're going to bump into two men. In Kvuras Rachel, near the burial place of Rachel, who of course is the great-grandmother of Benjamin. So this is going to resonate because this is Saul's great-great-grandmother. And you're going to bump into these two guys, Bigvul, at the border, Binyamin, of Benjamin. Bitzeltzach, in Tzeltzach. Va'amru elacha. And these two guys are going to say to you, your two donkeys that you went out looking for, those donkeys that you went out to request, they have been found. And now your father, these two men will tell you, he is abandoned. He's let go of the worry over the fate of the donkeys. Your father's now worried about your fate. What has happened to my son? Stop for a second. So I alluded to this earlier. David had signs from God that showed him, you know, David, whatever it will be, but know that I have something special in store for you. You're going to be a leader. Saul, boom. Paradigm shift of enormous proportions. So Samuel, with God's direction clearly, is giving him now his signs. He's going to say, look, and he didn't say this to him, but he's essentially saying like this to Saul. Saul, I understand you don't see yourself this way. God does, and I do. But just for your own edification, to make you really be a neman, believe in yourself, I'm going to throw some, you know, Madame Zushka-style prophecies your way. So if you doubt me, and I know you don't, but these signs shall come true. So when you leave me today, I'm telling you exactly what is going to happen. And at the end of the completion of the shlemus, of the fulfillment, the kiyum of these signs that are going to come your way, any shadow of doubt that lingers still in the periphery of your psyche shall be removed. And they're for the benefit, really, of Saul. They're not for anybody else. Now, who else? Can you think of a famous person in our Torah who also needed signs? Moshe, thank you, Jason. Remember? By the bush, Moshe says, wait a minute. Let me get this right. I'm going from a shepherd, again, right? And now I'm going to be the king, and you want me to confront the world's king, Pharaoh? Really? I can't go in empty-handed. So God says, oh, okay, fine. You want some superpowers? I got it. What's that in your hand? It's a stick? Boom. Good. Now you're going to use it for X, Y, and Z. Anything else? Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I'll show you the trick with the leprosy thing. Oh, okay. Right? So it's like for Moshe's benefit. It's not for God's benefit. But we're human. And as frail humans, sometimes we need encouragement. Perhaps these signs are for us. Okay? Remember the story I shared with you? I'll share it with you in case you haven't heard the story. It's an amazing story. Bears repeating. Rabbi Yehuda Silver, who was part of this story, shared this with me. I know I've said it over in synagogue, but if you weren't there, you need to hear this song. Young man, David, goes from America to Jerusalem, the holy city. And he's at the Western Wall close to Shabbat, and he is a non-believer, doesn't keep anything. A couple guys from Eisha Torah, Kiruv Outreach Organization of great fame, grab David, bring him up for Shabbos meal. He never leaves. One big meal. He's there learning Torah, and he stays like, 6 months, 9 months in Israel, and he's like a house on fire. And he takes upon himself from 0 to 613, or the best he can take of the 613 mitzvahs and everything else. He's just amazing. And then, of course, the day comes where he has to go back to America because he needs to make an income and continue his life. He's not married, but he still has a life. So he goes back to America, and he starts to pursue his old life. And he finds it very difficult to reconcile the new David with the old David. Very difficult, especially Shabbos becomes a major issue, not working and getting home and preparing. One particularly tough week passes. Shabbos is over, and he is down in the dumps. So he says to God, God, I need a sign. I need some belief here. I'm becoming a disbeliever. And if you don't send me a sign between now and this coming Shabbos, I'm going to take off the yarmulke, I'm taking off the tzitzis, and I'm walking away. Okay, see, signs. So the whole week goes, and of course, young David's not an idiot. He knows, rationally, that he's just simply rationalizing his own lack of faith and trust and whatever. But he's excusing his behavior. So Shabbos comes. Of course, there's no big lightning bolt from heaven. So David doesn't go to shul, doesn't make kiddush, doesn't have Friday night meal. He just simply sits down, gets his clicker out, puts on the TV, and is watching TV Friday night, enjoying himself, having a beer, having some popcorn. Shows come on, Letterman comes on. Letterman is interviewing the famous Jewish, well, actually he's not Jewish, but people think he is Jewish, a late comedian, Robin Williams, who's just himself come back from the Holy Land. And Letterman's talking to Robin, Robin's talking to Letterman, they're having like a nice three session, probably 45-minute discussion back and forth. And he says to, Robin, how'd you like Israel? It's great, whoa. He says, did you learn any Hebrew? So Robin Williams says, yeah, shall I learn to phrase? So Robin Williams looks into the camera at Letterman, and he says, Shabbat Shalom, David. Shabbat Shalom, David. Somebody in the synagogue yelled out after the Rabbi Silver told the story. He was part of this. He says, I bet the TV stayed on the rest of Shabbos. We're not always going to get Robin Williams, giving us that Shabbat Shalom David. But for the sake of Saul, he needed something. He needed encouragement. So Samuel's now laying out the future, the immediate future of all these things that are going to transpire. So he tells me he's going to meet these two guys, and he tells me exactly where he's going to meet them, what the dialogue is going to be about, and it doesn't stop there. Let's continue writing, okay? So they're going to tell you, don't worry anymore about the donkeys. Worry about your dad's worry for you. Pasuk Gimel, number 3. V'chalafta misham, and then Samuel says, after you meet these two guys and talk about the donkey situation, you will travel, you will go beyond that place. V'hala'a, onward. U'vasa'el ad elon tavor. Then you're going to come to a place called the Plains of Tabor. U'mitza'ucha sham shalosha anashim. There, you're going to be met by 3 guys. First it was 2, now it's 3 different guys. And who are these 3 guys? Olim el Elokim Beitel. They're going to be going up to sacrifices in Beitel, which was the place where Jacob had the visual, the vision with the Malachim, the angels going up and down. So apparently, in the absence of a tabernacle, some people went to this place that they knew as Beitel, where Jacob had the dream, and they made it a holy site. So these 3 guys are going to be going up to offer sacrifices in Beitel. Echad, and one of these 3, and let's get very specific here, Noseh Shoshah Gidayim, one of these 3 guys is going to be carrying with them 3
goats, three kids. The echad and another one, noseh shoshes kikros lechem, is going to have three large loaves of bread. The echad noseh, and one of them is going to be carrying nevel yayin, the ubiquitous container of wine. So you're going to meet these three guys. V'sha'ulach al shalom, and they're going to ask you how you are. They're going to say, shalom aleichem, sir. How are you? How you doing? V'nasnulach al shtei lechem, and they're actually going to hand you. They're going to give you two loaves of bread. V'lakakta miyadam. And by the way, you should take this from them. Do not refuse their hospitality. Achar kein, after this, tavo givas ha'elokim. Then you're going to come to the givah, the hill of God. Asher sham nitzivei plishtim. And by the way, that's the place where there's these Philistine lords, these officers, are stationed there. Why mention the Philistines at this point? Because they're going to play a huge role in Saul's life. So it's almost like a foreshadowing. By the way, as these things are unfolding, Mr. Saul, you know, the Philistines are kind of like punishing our people. They have some officers stationed there to make life miserable for the Jews and collect taxes. Just as a side point, they're going to be there. Nothing germane to the story at all, except for an illusion of a future that Saul's going to have to fight them. So he says, you're going to go to this place. And it will be as you enter into the city there, this place, the hill of God, you're going to meet up, you're going to be pogeya. You're going to meet up with a band, a chevel means a rope, but a rope is like constructed from different bands that are intertwined. You're going to meet up with a chevel nevim, a group of prophets, yordim mehabama, who are descending from the high place. V'lifnehem, and in front of them, before them, nevel v'sof v'chalil v'chinor, they're going to have a bunch of musical instruments. They're going to have a lyre, a drum, a flute, a harp, and the himma misnabim. They're going to be nevim. They're going to be in the throes of prophesying. These three guys that you're going to meet. This group, excuse me. So again, first two guys are going to discuss the dialogue with the dad and everything else, right? And that's going to be by his great-great-grandmother's kever, Rachel's tomb. Then he's going to go on from there to Beit El, and he's going to meet the three guys with the bread and the goats and the wine, and they're going to offer him a couple loaves of bread. It's very specific, right? It's not like Shmuel saying, he's giving lottery numbers down now, okay? And, you know, he's giving very specific information about what will happen. And then he says, and you're going to go from there, and you're going to meet up a group of prophets, and they're going to have very specific instruments, giving you the bands, you know, exactly what, you know, which musical they're going to be playing, this number from Frank Sinatra, and they're going to be playing, right? He's giving them all the little details. He says, and then, he says, they're going to be prophesying. And something magical is going to happen to you, young Saul. Look at Pasuk Vav, number 6. V'tzolcho alecha, and then magically will rest or pass on you the Ruach Hashem. The Spirit of God is going to rest on you, ostensibly, as you encounter these individuals who already are somehow in the reverie of God's Spirit on them. You're going to share that Spirit with them. V'hisna b'so imam. You will start to prophesy along with this group of prophets. V'nefachto, and you will be transformed, v'ishacher, into another human being. You will no longer be Saul. Oh my gosh, this is great. V'haya, and it will be, ki savona osos ha'elaloch, when these osos ha'elo, when these magical signs, all will come true to you. You then will have to do what is in your power to do. It means you're going to become the king, and you're going to have ownership now over all of Israel. So that amazing power is going to be under your yad, under your hand. Because you will now know with 100% metaphysical certitude that God is with you. So So then Samuel says, you shall go down to Gilgal ahead of me. This is in the future, after all these events transpire. We're talking months into the future. I'm telling you now, Shmuel says to Saul, this is going to be the first and most important test of your kingship. That in the future, meaning the signs will have come and gone. You'll believe in yourself. You'll have power over the people. And there will come a moment in the very near future where you're going to go to Gilgal ahead of me, meaning Samuel. Behold, I am going to be coming down to you. La'alos salos, to offer up burnt offerings. Lizboach zichei shlamim, to offer peace offerings. Shibas yamim tochel ado elecha. You should wait for me for 7 days till I come to you, Samuel says to Saul. V'hodati lecha, and then I will let you know, I'll inform you, eis asher tase, what you should do. Stop. This is the one and only time that Saul is given a warning. This is a test. In other words, the other issues of the people he's going to meet and what's going to happen, the dialogue, that's great. That's for Saul's benefit. But this is a nisayon. It's a test. Now, on the surface, it sounds the simplest test in the world. What's the test? Saul says, look, at some point in the future, you'll find that yourself in Gilgal. And you're going to wait 7 days, and within 7 days, I, Samuel the prophet, promise that I will come to you, we'll offer animals together, and I shall tell you what's on God's mind. Got it? But he's making, according to the rabbis, the success or failure of his kingdom on this one test. How is this even a test? Well, I don't want to spoil it, but you'll see later on it becomes a major test. I'll give you a little foreshadowing. It's easy to wait 7 days when there's no pressure. But what if within those 7 days the enemies are at the gates? What if they're knocking the gates down? And what if the people start abandoning you as the king and saying, come on, come on, we need help from God, offer up the animals. And you're like, but Samuel told me wait 7 days, I can't go against Samuel. You're not going to have an army in 7 days as we're all deserting you. Big issue that's going to happen to poor Saul a little bit later on. Okay, let's wind up for tonight on something which I hope you'll find profound. Let's go on, please. Pasuk number Yud. Excuse me, test, number 9. V'hayana will be, v'hafno so shechmol alechas me'im Shmuel. As soon as Saul turned away to depart from Samuel, v'yafoch lo elokim lev acher, God transformed him and changed his heart into another heart. He became a different human being. V'yavo kolososa eila b'yamahu. And every single item, every detail that had been given over as signs from Samuel to Saul, transpired on that day exactly. That doesn't mention everyone in order, it just mentions the last one. Look at Yud. Number 10. By Yehoshama Givasa, so on that day he went up to Givah, to the hill. This is the last of the signs, where he's going to meet the band of prophets. So notice clearly, the first two signs, the dialogue about the lost donkeys, and the three guys with the wine, and with the bread, and with the goats, that already happened. But we're only going to mention the last of the otot, of the signs. So he goes up, and he nay heaven of him the crosso, right? Sure enough, the band of prophets is coming to meet him, just like Shmuel told him. But titzlach alav ruach elokim, and the Spirit of God rested upon him, vayisnabe besocham, and he prophesied within them. Vayehi, and it was. Kol yodom et moshe sham. Anyone who knew Saul from the day or the day before, vayiru, and now they saw him. Vihine im nevi'im nibah, and here he becomes a prophet, he's prophesying along with a bunch of navis. And each man from the nation said to one another, to their friend, what? What is this that's happened to this guy Ben Kish? The son of Kish, not even calling him Saul. They're saying the son of Kish, his young kid, look what's happened to him. Is now Saul a member of the prophets? Oh my gosh. So stop for a second. So this is not where we're going to end. We're going to end in just 3 more minutes with your indulgence. So they're mocking Shaul. So a paradigm shift has occurred, and Saul's gone from the garnished, the nothing, to the king of Israel. But before he becomes the king of Israel, because this hasn't happened yet, he has established himself as a Navi. So people look at him and say, now look who's a Navi. What? So it became a part of a diet, like when you wanted to put someone down, like you see somebody in an alley, think they're a big shot. It became part of the vernacular where you'd say, Hagam Shaul Banavim, right? You see somebody who holds himself up to be high and mighty. They'd see somebody who was like yesterday in the outhouse. They'd say, oh, look who thinks they're part of the prophets now. You now Saul's part of the prophets? That's how little esteem Saul was held in the eyes of the people. That someone from the smallest tribe, from a nondescript family, everything else becomes a Navi? Forget about the fact that he's the king, unbeknownst to them. So it became part of the vernacular. People would put each other down by saying, is Saul now part of the people? Let's just finish off this last delightful, delightful place, and then we'll get to comments. Okay? This is Pasuk number Yudbeis, 12. Thank you. Vayan ish misham vayomer. And so the man from there answered, Vayomer umi avihen, and who is their father? Who's the father of this Saul? Alkin Haisel the Mashal, therefore it became, like we said, a parable. People used to put other people down. Hagam Shaul Dov Nevi'im, people would say, is Saul now among the prophets? Now, what was the answer of the man who listened to them put, in other words, somebody put Saul down by saying, who is his father? He's a Ben Kish? So his question is, who does he think he is? He's a son of prophets? So the other guy says, you idiot. Prophecy's not hereditary. Person who becomes a prophet on his own. It's not in the merit of his father or his grandfather. So the guy, in other words, put the guy back in his place. He reprimanded him. He said, big deal. Okay, he's a Ben Kish. I agree. Yesterday, he's a son of Kish. He was a great man, but not a prophet. But prophecy's not passed down generationally, but from parent to child. So be quiet, all right. Leave him alone. Now comes the part that I think is so delightful, so beautiful. I want to end with this tonight. Listen to this. Verse number Yud Dal, number 14. Okay? I'm sorry. Yes. Yud Gemel. Yud Gemel, right? Vayechal Mehis Nabo. So he stopped his prophesying. Vayavo Habam, and he came to the high place. This is the high place now in the city where he met up with the band of the prophets, right? Just like Samuel had preordained for him. Vayomer, and he meets up with his uncle. Vayomer Dod Shaul Eila Ve'el Naro. And so he meets up with his uncle, happens to be coincidentally there in the Bama place, in the high spot where he meets up with the band of Navis. So his uncle is shocked to see him there. And he says to him, An Halachtem, where have you guys been? My gosh, we have been scouring Israel looking for you. You guys went off looking for dad, my brother's donkeys. Everyone put out a search party looking for you. Where have you guys been? An Halachtem, where did you guys go? Vayomer. And so Saul responds to his uncle, Livakeshes asanos. Well, we went out originally to look for the donkeys. Vinireki ayin. And then when we saw that we couldn't find them, they weren't around. Vanaval Shmuel. So we came to Samuel, because Samuel's a seer. He was going to surely help us. Vayomer dod Shaul. Oh my gosh, says the uncle of Saul. You went to see Shmuel HaNavi, the real guy? Come on, give me the lowdown. Hagidem Ali, please tell me. This is amazing, the uncle says. You met Shaul? Ma Amar Lechem Shmuel, what did Samuel tell you? What did he say? What are next week's Powerball numbers? Something. This is amazing. What did you had an audience with Samuel himself? What did he tell you? This is a mind-bending. Vayomer Shaul El Dodo. Saul says to his uncle, Hagidi Gidlanu. Yeah, he surely told us. Kinin Suasanos. That don't worry, donkeys have been found, and now dad's more worried about your survival than the donkeys. But the matter of the kingship, he did not mention one word to his uncle, Asher Mashmal. I mean, if you want to know who Saul is, think about this. He meets up with his uncle, and uncle says, what's with you, right? Oh, I'm with Samuel the prophet. Okay, come on. Give me some delicious stuff here. What did you guys talk about? Well, we talked about, of course, dad's lost donkeys. Anything else? No? Okay. The rabbis say that this moment is the reason Saul becomes the king of Israel. And he inherited this from an amazing person, Rachel. So let's go back for a moment. You can close your books. Rachel, Rachel Imenu, is given a choice. Lavan, the evil father, dresses her sister Leah up in the white wedding dress and is about to bring her to Jacob. It's not going to work, though, right? Because Simanim, they have a whole code that they've set up between Jacob and Rachel because they understand who Laban is. Does Rachel use the code? No. She tells the code to Leah. She, according to many, is in the tent underneath, like, speaking the words when Jacob starts to ask for the code. You know, the rains in Spain falls mainly on the, right? And because there's a fear that if he hears Rachel's, doesn't hear Rachel's voice, he'll understand it's not Rachel's Leah, he'll be suspicious. So Rachel actually answers Jacob. That's how much she defends her love of her sister. But wait a minute. Rachel could have stopped the whole thing. So could Jacob. Think about how simple it would have been. All Jacob had to do was go to Lavan and say, evil Uncle Lavan, I know you're up to something. It will not work. Sinish Gornish Helfen. You see, Rachel and I suspected you all along. We know who you are. You're Lavan Harami. You're the deceiver. You're the cheater. We have a whole code for you. So whatever you think you're going to do, think again. Don't embarrass yourself publicly, Uncle.
because we've outmaneuvered you. That's all he had to say. And he would have married Rachel, correct? He doesn't, though. Why? And why doesn't Rachel? The same issue here. We think tznius, modesty, is the protection of a woman's sleeve length or her dress. And it is. Don't get me wrong. That is, of course, part of what it means to be a tzanua. But how are you a male modest person? Well, clearly, how you dress, how you behave is part of modesty. But this is so much more profound. Jacob and Rachel had a relationship. Correct? From the moment they met at the well and he kisses her, they're in love. And they're sharing 7 years of the work and investment that Jacob makes is for Rachel. It's for love of Rachel. Can you imagine the response of Lavan, the cynic, to the disclosure of a pre-existing relationship between his daughter and Jacob? Can you imagine his, you know, Mr. Cynic, right? Oh, you have a whole bunch of code worked out. Do you, Jacob? Do you, Rachel? Really? What else have you guys been up to out with the sheeple for 7 years? What have you guys been doing? You have a relationship already? What? He's a cynic, right? So he's going to... What is tznius? Real humility or real, if you will, modesty is the protection of a relationship. And so Rachel and Jacob would not reveal the depths of their relationship to Lavan and to his scrutiny and cynicism. Mm-hmm. Saul spent 12 hours on a roof with Samuel. It's not for my uncle's scrutiny. My uncle does not need to know, nor will he ever know, that Samuel and I share this. That is sacred. No one in the world is privy to this. That is why Saul becomes Saul the king, because he gets it from Rachel, his great-grandmother. And you know who else got the same tznius and is described by the rabbis in the Gemara as having the same tznius, the same modesty? Esther, Queen Esther. Never would she divulge to the king who she was and what her relationship was with Mordecai. She was commanded to never say it, not a word. The fact that Mordecai and Esther are married and already share a history, not one word, because that's tznius, to protect the dignity and honor of our relationship together. So now I think we really come full circle. We understand how it's passed down multi-generationally. It goes from Rachel, goes to Saul, and Saul passes it down beautifully to Mordecai and his great-granddaughter, Esther. Because Saul is the great-grandfather of Esther, so it all comes full scale. Everyone, have a wonderful, wonderful evening.